Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Don't want to know.
Hey, look, we're back on a day we're not usually back. I'm Kai Ryssdal, the host of Marketplace, Public Radio's program on business and the economy.
And I am Molly Wood, and this is Make Me Smart, our podcast about business, technology, and culture. And this is a special bonus episode.
Bonus.
I'm not even calling it a mini episode because that would suggest that we are going to engage in brevity.
We're not running a clock on this puppy, yo. We're not.
It's not happening. But yes, you are not delusional. This is, in fact, a special Wednesday episode of Make Me Smart.
Okay, Casey Kasem. so here's why we're back. We did a big thing yesterday with Steve Huffman, the CEO of Reddit. Ran a long interview with him, and we also topped that with a little bit of a discussion of President Trump's speech last night, which was after the time we taped. And we said, listen, we want to come back and talk about this speech a little bit. But then also, holy cow, Molly Wood, other stuff has happened.
Yeah. Like, amazingly, yeah. I am off the Trump train. I only want to talk about Uber. But I think we're going to find some ways that these two stories work in together.
Perhaps. A little bit of business, a little bit of tech, and some feedback from you coming up. All right. So that was, by the way, just a signpost, as it were. That was the sting, what we in the audio business call a sting, a brief musical interlude for our news fix, which is the part of the program onto which we will enter now, Ms. Wood.
So, yes, what happened yesterday is that we were previewing the president's address to Congress, a joint session that it was not a State of the Union. The big difference I could tell between that and a State of the Union was that he didn't say those words, State of the Union.
Yeah, this, right.
Otherwise, it seems substantially the same.
Yeah, it totally was. Can we have an interlude here for the tie, by the way? I'm dead serious. I am working on a tie stability indicator. And as we sit here on this Wednesday morning, I do not know what color tie the president of the United States is wearing. But last night it was blue for the first time in ever, I think, since he's been president, right? The guy wears red ties all the time. Also, he buttoned his suit coat, which is a little bugaboo of mine. He has not been buttoning his suit coat.
I have seen you do this on the Twitter, talk about the buttoning suit coat.
It's a thing of mine.
I don't, as both a cowgirl and a Californian, know that much about suits.
When you stand up, you button it. It's that simple. When I went to dance class in fifth grade, where the girls had to wear white gloves and the boys had to wear suits and ties, you stand up, and I think it was Mr. Richards was his name. You stand up, you button your suit coat. Anyway, all of which is to say, this was an interesting piece of political theater, right? Because that's what it was.
Sure.
That was remarkably free on substantive details, and thus your takeaway from yesterday is as spot on today as it was yesterday, which is that we need to complexify it to understand the oversimplification.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the case, because we were actually excited about potentially getting some details. We did not, but we did get lots of claims. Mm-hmm. Should we start there?
So the big one, of course, is for my purposes, is that thing where he said 94 million Americans are not in the labor force. And that's a it's a thing called labor force participation rate. And let's not go down that rabbit hole. Let's just say that that is an incomplete and not entirely accurate number, because he's counting like babies and people in prison and retirees and people
between
the ages of 13 and 15. Yeah. Labor force participation rate is amazingly complicated. And the president oversimplified it last night to the point as to make it meaningless, which is a thing he has done repeatedly with specifically labor market and economic numbers. Right. He casts aspersions on the Bureau of Labor Statistics and on Janet Yellen. I mean, a bunch of stuff. And it just, it's important to know that number was not right. It's not an accurate representation of what's going on in the labor market.
In fact, the Washington Post, in its fact check of this, referred to it as absurd.
Okay. Yeah.
So there was that, and said, and then went on to say that the figures are at minimum out of date, in addition to all of the other things that you said. All right, now tell me about the Harley Davidson thing. Like, I didn't even follow that. I'm not even going to lie. Well, it was so oversimplified slash complex that I'm not exactly sure what happened. So help me.
Well, it's all honestly okay. So here's the deal. It's about the size of the engine, right? He's talking. So the president said this. They told me that it's very hard to do business with other countries, Harley Davidson, because they tax our goods at such a high rate. They said that in one case, another country taxed their motorcycles at 100%. So first of all, the country was India. And second of all, it's because they didn't want engines over 800 cubic centimeters, which is way down in the global trade details, but goes to show yet again that the president oversimplified. We are trying to complexify it for you by pointing out that global trade is complicated. Countries have their own interests. Not everything is as it appears. And while that speech played extremely well in a certain sector of the viewing public, the details were missing, and that makes my brain hurt. Honestly, it does.
Where does that fall in the normal versus not normal spectrum, though? Because I feel like those addresses to Congress are, for the most part, the only time that everyday Americans may tune in.
Right.
Isn't it pretty normal to obscure or gloss over the details?
Well, yes, but. So first of all, let me back up for a minute. All of these States of the Union and joint addresses and all of these things are political theater. That's what they're for. And I, as much as anybody, literally, I get goosebumps when the sergeant at arms of the House of Representatives stands up and pushes that button to turn his microphone on and says, "Mr. Speaker, the president of the—" I love that. I think it's so cool. And I would love to be in the chamber for that one day, right? That's what they're for. But basically, when presidents go up there and say things, they are grounded in reality. This speech was not grounded in, I will speak only to my brief here, it was not grounded in economic reality. And that is disappointing, because what we have seen from the president so far in his campaign and in his term is a lack of details, and you can't run an economy that way. You need to know what the tax reform plan is. You need to know what the infrastructure plan is. You need to know what the border adjustment tax plan is. All of that stuff. And that's what makes me crazy.
Yeah, and it may have made us less crazy had there been specific proposals before.
Yep.
This speech. But I think even Republicans now are to the point where they are waiting for some crucial details. And I think the market is waiting for those details. For example, you tweeted this morning, Kai, that one of the things that was missing from the speech was any mention of Dodd-Frank, any mention of rolling back financial regulatory reforms, and that now, you know, just as we've sort of started to see from Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and analysts starting to say, like, you know, maybe this isn't like the top of his priority list, that if anything is going to pull back these market gains that we've seen on the hopes of regulatory reform, it's the fact that he might not do them.
He might not. But here's the deal. And here's the thing that confounds me. And then I think we probably ought to turn to your topic du jour. But the thing that confounds me about the market impact of that speech is that the Dow crossed 21,000 today. It's in record territory for the 13th out of the last 14 days. And I honestly don't understand what is driving this market. And that frightens me a little bit.
I think it comes down to a favorite phrase of mine. It goes like this: hope springs eternal.
Oh. Also, you can't tell who's swimming naked till the tide goes out, but that's a whole different thing.
See, that's going to be a T-shirt.
So first of all, it's not mine, right? But also, now we need to point people back to yesterday's thing where you talked about the absurdities pitch. But
well, I'm going
to
save that for the feedback portion of the episode.
All right.
But before all of that,
yes.
I have so much to say about Uber.
Okay. Well, let's set it up. Let's explain why you have so much to say.
So last week on our program and across the internetosphere, we talked about, it used to be like the blogosphere and then the web, and then now we don't even
Twitter
know.
Twitter sphere, but internetosphere just doesn't roll off the tongue, so we're not going to use it.
So last week we talked about Uber. There was, as you probably remember, a blog post by a woman named Susan J. Fowler alleging all kinds of sexual harassment in addition to general dysfunction at the Uber engineering department. This week, none of that went away. Travis Kalanick said that he was going to do an independent investigation led by former Attorney General Eric Holder. who has previously done work on behalf of Uber and lobbying on behalf of Uber, that it would also include Arianna Huffington, who is a board member at Uber and whose Huffington Post actually was accused of like a lot of the same behaviors. So people were skeptical of the investigation.
Right.
Then this week, another post, this time an anonymous post from a woman who said she was in the engineering department at Uber, detailed even more shocking sexual harassment allegations. And then there was the video.
Yeah.
The video apparently taped on Super Bowl Sunday because drivers, I think, and regulators insisted on having cameras in Uber cars for security purposes, showed Travis Kalanick on Super Bowl Sunday, so pretty recently, having a conversation between with a longtime driver, Fozzie Kamel. And we're going to play a little bit of the part of the conversation about driver pay that's, you know, perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
But you're raising the standards and you're dropping the prices.
We're not dropping the price on that.
But in general, the whole price.
Yeah, we have to. We have competitors. Otherwise, we've got a business.
Competitors, man. You had the business model in your hands. You could have the prices you want, but you choose to buy everybody a ride.
All right. So terrible sound quality. But basically, it's a driver, an employee, although that's not what the courts say, talking to his boss about the pricing model for Uber, which this guy works for.
Right. And he's saying you buy everybody a ride, which is in reference to all of the subsidies that Uber has been giving and Lyft. Basically, Uber and Lyft are locked in a subsidy war trying to make rides cheaper so that they can grow. Each of them, you know, they're having a talk. They're having a pretty good conversation. But the driver is not having it. Right. He is not hearing Travis's protestations. Mm-hmm. And then Kalanick, you know, his temper gets the best of him.
You keep changing every day.
What have I changed about black?
Huh?
What
have you changed? The whole business.
What?
You dropped the prices.
On black?
Yes, you did.
Bullshit.
We started with $20. We started with $20.
You know what?
How much is the mile now? $2.75?
You know what?
What?
Some people don't like to take responsibility for
their
shit.
Responsibility.
They blame everything
but
in their life on somebody else.
But why are you sending an email for town cars?
Good luck.
Good luck to you too, but I know you don't gonna go far.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. So, all right. So we should probably preface the discussion portion of this by saying Travis Kalanick is a guy, and we talked about him, what, a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
About this idea of reputation and how important it is. And here's where Travis's reputation comes back to bite him in the fanny, because he is known to be, I'm going to say I'm just going to call him a jerk, right? He's just a jerk.
Yeah.
And he then gets no benefit of the doubt because of his demonstrated past actions that have trickled down through the company, and the company has demonstrated itself to be a jerk. And now here you have it on tape, and wow.
Yeah. And he's got a temper, clearly. You know, and what's interesting is, just as a side note, what's really interesting is no one's quite sure whether black car prices have dropped.
Yeah.
That's like really hard to quantify, but there is no question that prices across the board for Uber rides have dropped. That driver pay, there have been cuts across the board, right? The driver amount used to be a lot higher and it gets lower every month, practically. There were big protests in almost exactly this time last year, February of last year, because there was a 15% reduction in fares, which means 15% lower wages. Drivers consistently complain that they make far less than the amount that Uber promises. And that on top of that, they're responsible for gas expenses, repairs, maintenance. And, you know, it ends up not being the promised land that it is supposed to be. And then on top of that, Travis keeps talking about replacing them with autonomous cars.
Autonomous
so
cars.
So it's like not a good feeling.
How important is it that Travis Kalanick is not just the CEO of this company, but he's the founder of the company?
Yeah. That is everything. That is actually everything. Now, this is the part where we should say he's apologized.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
After this whole series of events, right, in our Slack channels, everybody started saying, OK, what is what's the Travis exit watch 2017? How does this guy stay at this company? He did. And this is a remarkable step. Issue an apology. He sent it to all Uber employees and posted it. By now, you've seen the video where I treated an Uber driver disrespectfully. To say that I'm ashamed is an extreme understatement. And he says, it's clear that this video is a reflection of me and a stark reminder that I must fundamentally change as a leader and grow up. This is the first time I've been willing to admit that I need leadership help, and I intend to get it.
Hi, my name is Travis. I'm a bad leader. Hi, Travis.
My name is Travis.
I mean, you know.
I have a problem with leadership. It's really weird language,
yeah.
I have to say.
Yeah, but it's interesting because his reputation and his style now has trickled down through the whole company, and the company is tainted by his reputation.
Yep. And so the founder thing, to answer your founder question, it matters on both of those levels.
Yeah.
The first is something that we've been talking about internally as just like a cultural concept, right? The concept of permission. And we're seeing the ripple effect of permission at Uber. We're seeing it nationally. We're seeing all when there is what is considered tacit permission, all kinds of bad things can occur. Travis Kalanick has made it crystal clear at Uber that growth is the priority, period. That it is a super high stakes environment, that he's proud of that, that he likes people who get in fights and who are abrasive and hardcore. That is part of the corporate culture. So there's no reason to assume that that isn't going to trickle down into the culture and make it a bad place to work. It's also probably the reason that he's not going to be out at Uber.
Right, exactly. He's the one, and his reputation and his mindset and his drive are what have built this company. Because every time there was an obstacle, he went, just to get back to your bear hunt analogy, he went through it. He went through it and he blew it up, whether it was regulators or, I mean, what have you.
Yeah.
And that's why this company is now valued at like $69 billion.
Yeah. And there are investors all over the world. Right. There are venture capital firms in Silicon Valley who are heavily invested in this guy. There are mutual funds in Saudi Arabia that are heavily invested in this guy. And I say this guy instead of this company, because in this case, he is inextricable. And you've started to see, there was a really interesting article at Pando.com. Pando, for people who don't know, it is basically a Silicon Valley focused publication. But a really interesting point was made in this Pando article about how during the dot-com era, founders of companies really got disrespected. Like, companies would grow to a certain level and then their boards or their VCs would force them to, you know, quote, bring on a grown up.
Right. So Eric Schmidt at Google is the great example, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's like the ultimate grown up that was brought in to run the company, to grow it, to assume that the founders didn't know what they were doing.
Right.
In the new boom, the one we've been seeing lately, like, founders are everything. There's an overcorrection, which is a pretty common theme also throughout.
Yeah.
I don't know, everywhere.
Yeah.
So now we're overcorrecting in favor of the founder. Like, you look at somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, who has a succession plan for himself. Like, he plans to run Facebook until he dies. You've got Snap going public with terms that don't even allow some shareholders to vote.
Yeah, which I don't understand that at all.
Which is insane.
Yeah.
And then you see what founder syndrome can do to a company, like, for example, GoPro. Like, I've argued that GoPro has brutal founder syndrome because you had Nick Woodman, who had one great idea.
Yep.
And that's it.
Yep.
And no idea how to grow that into a company and no clear strategy for where to go from there, but won't apparently listen to anybody else from what I hear inside that company. Everything goes through
what
Nick.
What a great example, yeah.
And so Uber, I think Uber could either be a Facebook or it could be a GoPro.
Hmm.
It depends on how dangerous Travis. I think if Uber is a public company, he's out on his tuchus, but they're not.
Do you think this delays the much and oft talked about Uber IPO?
I think so.
Yeah.
Even if it's only a couple weeks, like, for them, while they wait for the furor to die down. And the question really is whether it's going to. If we start to see a revaluation of Uber, then I think his job is in trouble. But I, at least right now, my money is on him staying, even though I think it's, you know, not great for the people who work there.
Right.
That's what I think. What do you think? Is he going to get the boot?
No, I think he stays as long as he wants to.
Yeah.
Yeah. No question about it.
All right. Let's talk about your feedback. Thank you to everyone who said that they wish that I would do absurdities. So yesterday on the episode, I revealed that I have a secret dream to quit my job and start a t-shirt company.
Not so secret anymore.
No, this has like been years in the making, you guys, years. And clearly I should have registered that you are all like, I don't know, at least 5 or 6 years ago. Because now I'm sorry to report that Absurdities is an existing t-shirt company.
You know.
However, our producer, Jenny Josephson, had a really good idea this morning.
Yeah, what was it? I said it was in Slack somewhere. Where was it? What did
she said that we should make me Smarties.
Oh, man.
Right? With the little things that come out of our show, like, it's just a small horse. I'm doing it. I will pay for this my damn self. Like, I'm into it.
Taking money out of the college account. All right, so that's one little bit of feedback, is that we are now a T-shirt company, apparently. So
yeah.
So thank you for that. Gretchen Reed, on a different topic, also related to yesterday, though. Loved your riff about unintended consequences, she writes, i.e. the homelessness crisis that emerged after mental health funding was cut in the Reagan administration. I worked for many years for one of the Seattle nonprofits that started in 1980. People were sleeping on the streets and needed places to live. We have tried to build our way out of the homelessness crisis, Gretchen says, but we haven't succeeded. And we won't be able to build our way out of the ongoing crisis if the Trump administration eliminates still more of the safety net, which, and this is me speaking now, let's remember, is in the budget to be cut so that the Pentagon can grow.
Yep. Sarah Matson, among many others, says, I would love more than one podcast a week. People signed us up for all kinds of extra work. I think you could absolutely do longer podcasts like we're doing right this second.
Okay,
we have blown
through. Let me just say, parenthetically, for reader, another signpost here. We were talking before the tape rolled about how long we were going to go. And Molly said, no clocks. I don't want any clocks. We're just going to talk. So now we know. Close parentheses, back to the letter.
If this were the Oscars, the music would be so loud right now.
Oh, my God.
She said, I just got done listening and watching to your Facebook Live this morning for a second time. I find your podcast and live videos so packed with information that I want to make sure I've heard it all, but then I feel like I'm missing some of the unpacking of the information. So we need to do more episodes every week just so we can recap.
That's right. And we need to be more careful about packing and unpacking, I suppose.
And then you need a T-shirt with the takeaways.
True. Also, I'm going to read this to save you the glorification of yourself. P.S., Sarah Matson writes, P.S., Molly, I have a toddler. We all eat our kids' food some of the time. Why would I leave a perfectly delicious avocado cheese toast crust when I could eat hers? Half of the time, I forget to make my own food while I'm making hers. This ensures I eat something. End of quote. So a win for Molly Wood.
I was going to skip it.
I know you were, but I got to give it to you.
I was going
to
let it go.
I got to give it to you.
But I will point out that I have like an almost, my son is turning 10 tomorrow. Everybody else who's written in about this is a toddler. So like I've had 10 years to get it together and I'm clearly failing. On the topic of boy wonders like Travis Kalanick, please listen to our most recent interview with another one, Reddit CEO Steve Huffman, that came out Tuesday, the last day of February, February 28th. Check that out. If you're listening in your podcast app and you just don't hit stop, it'll roll right into it.
If you happen to be on iTunes, review us. Tell us what you think. Goods, bads, uglies, although be kind. But it does help. And if you have a friend who would like this podcast, tell them too.
Yeah. And email us, makemesmart@marketplace.org. See you next time, everybody.
Strong communication skills are critical for success in business and in life. Hi, I'm Matt Abrahams, and I host Stanford Graduate School of Business's Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. Each week, I sit down with experts to discuss the best tips to help you with your communication skills, from conflict management to mastering small talk to tackling communication anxiety. Join us and start to develop and hone your communication skills. Listen every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.